action.
Outside bringing the cattle in and making sure that the barn is battened down with all the wind and the cold here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountain. No, I'm just kidding, but it is cold. It is nasty. Probably where you are too, right? Good evening. Welcome to tonight's edition of the Molloy Show. Glad you can make it. Madness still prevails. Every night when I come on this program, I like to open up by saying, hey, madness has disappeared. Everything's sane. But that's, you know, it's not the case. It wasn't last night. It's not tonight. It certainly won't be tomorrow night. One can hope, though. I do want to mention that right at the beginning of the program that we are running a buy one, get one free. I got to do this. You know, I don't like to do commercials for my own product, but I have to do it. Because we are really at that point where we need mucho subscription. So we're running a two-for-one sale. All you have to do is go to MikeMolloy.com and click on the little banner there at the top. You'll see it. And if you buy a subscription for $59.40 for a year of commercial-free downloads of this program, you get to give one to a friend free. So you get two-for-one. You know, BOGO, I guess they call it. Buy one, get one. So please do that. If you're thinking about sending your favorite Republican something that'll just drive him or her absolutely stark-raving mad, send them a gift subscription of Molloy podcast downloads. They'll do it when they get it in the mail. They you know, nobody can not download. You know, the Molloy show. Well, I'm not going to listen except for the first 5 minutes. And then you got them. Consider it, okay? I don't like to talk about things for Christmas, but you know, what the hell? Why not? Or winter solstice, as we call it here at the Molloy Show, at the Molloy household, actually. Well, actually, Kathy and I call it winter solstice. Molly calls it Christmas. Molly calls it the birth of little baby Jesus. Ow! But that's okay. That's okay. So if you want to get a winter solstice gift for a friend or an enemy, please consider getting a Molloy Show podcast subscription. You get one and your friend gets one, or your enemy gets one, okay? Okay, let's start out with Prairie 2's report. He is our economic affairs correspondent. He writes, the markets rallied late today on a weakening U.S. dollar. With the dollar down 1.2% measured against gold, that would mean for each trillion the big banks have invested against the U.S. dollar in foreign markets, they made $12 billion today. That's assuming they can cash out before everybody else, but since they are the market makers, they do have the insider track on that. Meanwhile, back in the real world, U.S. homeowners lost $500 billion of their personal wealth this year. Still, we did better than last year when we collectively lost $3.6 trillion. Of course, that total of $4.1 trillion wasn't real money, since it was just a market bubble created by the big banks to create a basis for their $1,000 trillion credit derivative trade. That's a quadrillion, isn't it? I think it is. If your house is worth less than you paid for it, or what you owe on it, you might not think of it as pretend money. When the Wall Street bankers use that money to buy another yacht or a personal jet, it is real money, but not for you. You just keep making the payments, all right? By the way, they say you are paid too much and will have to take another pay cut. Some good news for a change, maybe. The lowering of the Medicare age could be a real boon for the economy if it isn't sabotaged somehow. The 55 to 65 group that this affects are the people at the top of the food chain. These are the people who could make real change if they are no longer shackled to their corporate masters by their company health care plan. And this could produce a real resurgence of small business that has been suppressed since Reagan made health care a for-profit business in the 80s. Coincidentally, President Obama has just come out with a long list of incentives, loans, and tax breaks for small business. To make this work, Obama will need to order Attorney General Eric Holder to open the crypt and reanimate the corpse of the Department of Justice Antitrust Division. Is there a new lightning rod on the roof of the RFK building? No new laws would be needed to get started. Everything from the Sherman Antitrust Law to Packers and Stockyards Act to an assortment of laws against leveraged buyouts and other corporate predators have been ignored by every president since 1980. Millions of jobs would be created, and this is why the Republicans are loath to allow health care reform, besides the bribes from the insurance companies. Once set in motion, this plan, the Republicans will be hard-pressed to oppose it, but they will anyway. Already, only 22% of voters will identify themselves as Republicans, openly opposing people who want to start a small business since their 401k has gone to hell, could put Republicans in single digits. We can hope. Yes, we can. Prairie2.com. Yeah, that's a good point. You know, there's a difference, isn't there, between defeat and discouragement, or despair and discouragement. I've been discouraged lately, and I think you have too. God knows Prairie too has. But the answer to all this stuff is right here. It really is. I mean, we don't have to just sink beneath the waves. We really don't. And we actually don't have to start tomorrow to kill all the corporate masters in a metaphorical sense. We can ignore them. If, like Prairie 2 just pointed out, if Eric Holder and Barack Obama would put their heads together and come up with this plan, trot out all the laws that are already on the books, infuse small businesses or small business entrepreneurs with the money, it would be self-infused. If this 55 to 60, I've changed my mind on this. I'm so confused. I don't know which way is up anymore. But the Medicare thing, okay. I realize buying into Medicare, now I've heard reports that it'll cost $600 a month until the public option or the exchange kicks in 2014. $600 a month is obviously $7,000 a year. Medicare right now only costs people who receive it, I don't know, $110, $120. So I'm not sure, you know, whether to scream or cheer. I don't know. So I just rely on people that I think are smarter than me about this kind of stuff. Prairie 2 happens to be one of those people. So I'll go with what he's saying. If this would free up all those people who are chafing under some corporate pig, knowing that they, the employee, can't leave, because if he leaves or she leaves, there goes the health insurance. And Cobra's about busted. So what to do, what to do? You stay right where you are. Well, that's the Soviet system. Everybody stay in place. No innovation, no entrepreneurship, just stay in place. The state, and in this case, it's corporate America, will take care of you. Until it doesn't need you anymore. Then it will kick you to the curb. So, and Prairie 2 is right. The 55 to 65 group, for the most part, not necessarily the case, but for the most part, they're the ones that have their hands on whatever remaining money is still in this economy that's not funny money or pretend money. And they could do this. They would want to do this. What person who works at a huge corporation that has innovative ideas that are going to go nowhere would like to break out and say, no, screw you, and leave the company, set up his or her own business, get going with 5 employees, then 8, and then 9, then 12, then 15, then 20, and then start to produce this innovative 21st century stuff. Whether it, and I don't mean junk stuff, like from China or Vietnam. I mean stuff. reanimate the manufacturing base in this country. We're not dead yet, is the point I'm trying to make. You know, as much negative sounding garbage as you hear on this program from your humble and obedient servant here, a lot of that comes out of frustration. I know that we're not dead yet. You know, I know that we can do it. And we don't have to overthrow the corporate state. All we have to do is ignore the sons of bitches. Let them go ahead and stir up the economy, churn everything, and we'll never defeat them that way. But we can get back who we are. Ask yourself this question.
He's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour, so don't despair, he said. Well, there's something about the winter solstice season that it's got to make you feel a little bit better, right? Doesn't it? I mean, without getting all crazy about it, but with all the lights and the good smells in the air, you know, bus fumes and... No, I'm serious. And what was that light over, was it Norway? Someplace in the Scandinavian countries? Did you see that video? I wonder what that was. This is so typical. This is from the Nashville Business Journal. There's a guy there who in Nashville, I believe. He was a managing producer of the Christian Broadcasting Network's television production group. And in that position, his name is Lance Schultz. You know, he was a TV executive for the Christian Broadcasting Network. In that position, he had a team of 16 writers, producers, editors, and videographers. And he was fired about a year ago. Well, now he has filed a lawsuit against the 700 Club. The Pat Robertson scam, you know, that's the gift that just keeps on taking, doesn't it? I have never seen a more successful con artist than Pat Robertson. This vile son of a bitch who uses the mythology of his religion to hide behind while he just pillages all over the earth. I mean, this is a guy who would send a huge corporate jet, allegedly full of donations, from the terminally gullible who listened to his program over to, was it Uganda or someplace, one of the countries in Africa, when in fact all the son of a bitch was doing was going over there to bring back diamonds and whatever he could get his pudgy hands on. It's astonishing. Pat Robertson is, if there is any truth about this Antichrist stuff, it's him. Oh my God, only worse. I mean, Robertson is a con artist of the highest order. He just is, but I digress. Lance Schultz was a supervisor. He was the managing producer for 700 Club. He oversaw a whole bunch of people. And he said in his lawsuit he was fired after missing work to be with his daughter Olivia for surgery. She's had more than 12 surgical procedures. She has a vascular disease called Cavimos hemangioma, which to folks like you and me, it's jumbles of blood vessels that can become greatly enlarged. It impedes organ function. It makes breathing almost impossible. Over the year that this condition has really struck this young woman, it has damaged her nose, lips, eyelids. It's called severe scarring, according to the lawsuit that was filed Monday. She has had 12 surgical procedures. The lawsuit says that Lance Schultz, the dad, requested and was granted a week of leave to attend a surgery in June of 2008 in L.A. to reconstruct part of his daughter's nose, ear, upper lip, and left eyebrow. In mid-July, when she suffered complications about a month after that, her father requested 2 weeks for a surgery scheduled for August 8th. Before he could get back to work, his daughter was diagnosed with acute appendicitis. That surgery occurred August 16th, and Lance Schultz contacted his supervisor to request additional leave, which was granted. But when he returned to work 5 days later, he was fired. And told by his supervisor, someone named Andrew Know, K-N-O-W, great name, that Andrew needed somebody in the office all the time. Now, Schultz's lawsuit is based on a violation of the Family and Medical Leave Act. He's seeking back pay, reimbursement for lost fringe benefits, interest, and attorney's fees. And the suit was filed U.S. District Court's Middle District of Tennessee. A spokesman for the Christian Broadcasting Network said, well, we haven't seen the lawsuit yet, so we cannot comment. But isn't that just so typical of these televangelists, especially a slime ball like Robertson? You ever watch this program? Sometimes just, I don't know, maybe it's a streak of masochism or I just need a good laugh, but I will tune into that program and I will watch those pod people on that program. Oh my God. You know, when you get three or four of them sitting there and they have these dead eyes and this kind of smug presentation, I guess they have a studio audience. But how can, I mean, even, you know, mainstream Christians, I guess they just ignore that. But how can anyone not see what that program is? What it's about? It's about enriching Pat Robertson. And he just flays Jesus Christ every day, just beats him into a bloody pulp. He beats him worse than the mob did on the way to Golgotha. Pat Robertson is just a sick pervert. And here's your proof. I wonder if Lance Schultz is a Christian. We'll be right back.
Primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It is 25 before the hour. What's going on between Representative John Conyers and Barack Obama? It sounds like at first glance to me anyway, what has been published at thehill.com that President Obama has got a very thin skin, or is like there's an egomaniacal quality to Obama that some of us have missed. In an interview with The Hill, Conyers said his opinions on what Obama's doing, whether it's healthcare or Afghanistan, have not made President Obama very happy. And according to John Conyers, the president picked up the phone several weeks ago to find out why Conyers was, quote, demeaning, end quote, him. In other words, if you take that sentence literally, Barack Obama calls John Conyers and says, why are you demeaning me? John Conyers' critical remarks, a lot of which have been reported by Huffington Post, appear to have irritated Mr. Obama. And, of course, if Obama's known for anything, it's an almost surreal calmness or disconnect call it what you like. George Bush was disconnected from everything because he was a dumbass. Barack Obama is not a dumbass. He's a very intelligent person, obviously, but he has this almost scary ability to just stay in the groove. You know what I'm saying? Anyway, Obama's decision to challenge Conyers is apparently an indication that he has a very high degree of criticism or of sensitivity to criticism from the so-called left in this country. I wouldn't necessarily call John Conyers on the left. I guess he is. The center's been moved so far to the right. You know, no offense to Conyers. Conyers is what he is. He's been there forever. Is a liberal? Sure. Conyers' critical remarks have got under Obama's skin, apparently. He's the second longest serving member in the House. And he told TheHill.com, quote, Obama called me and told me that he heard that I was demeaning him, and I had to explain to him that it wasn't anything personal. I had to explain to him that it wasn't anything personal. It was an honest difference on the issues. And he said, well, let's talk about it. And Conyers said he wasn't in the mood to chat. Well, a couple of things. Obama's decision to send all these troops to Afghanistan has not sat well with Conyers at all. Conyers said he intends to press his case in writing soon. Conyers said, quote, I want something so serious that he has to respond in writing, like I'm responding in writing to him, end quote. He said, and I love this quote, Conyers said, quote, calling in generals and admirals to discuss troop strength is like me taking my youngest to McDonald's and asking if he likes French fries, end quote. Conyers said further, quote, I've been saying I don't agree with him on Afghanistan. I think he screwed up on health care reform. And on Guantanamo and kicking Greg off the staff, that's White House counsel, former White House counsel, Greg Craig. Craig, as you know, is a leading proponent in the White House of closing Guantanamo and releasing the photos of detainees undergoing torture. And for taking that stance, of course, Greg Craig is no longer, Jesus, that's difficult, employed in the Obama administration. Now, Conyers has been an outspoken proponent of single-payer health care. He's been a steady critic of U.S. involvement in the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. He's also been at odds with the White House policy on extending expiring provisions of the Patriot Act. And he has been writing legislation that he hopes to submit to the House that is, you know, way to the left of the Senate's version. Now, as The Hill says, Obama and Conyers have a complicated and nuanced relationship. Conyers was the first member of the Congressional Black Caucus to endorse Obama over then-Senator Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination in 2008. And Conyers said earlier this year that he spent most weekends in 2007 and 2008 on the campaign trail trying to get Obama elected. Conyers said, quote, I did whatever was necessary to be done to win. I met with ministers, I met with unions, I met with lawyers, I met with community activists, I met with healthcare people. But, you know, Conyers is, you know, he's paid his dues. He can talk the talk because Conyers has walked the walk. I mean, this is a guy who's really put himself out there over the history of the civil rights movement. He marched alongside Martin Luther King Jr. Anyway, in mid-November, about a month ago, Conyers said on the Bill Press radio show that Obama and White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel have, quote, been bowing down to nutty right-wing health care proposals, end quote, in a desperate effort to get legislation passed. I like that. Bowing down to nutty right-wing health care proposals. And Conyers, you know, he's from Michigan, as is Michael Moore. And apparently Conyers is a friend of Michael Moore's. Conyers said he was, quote, getting tired of saving Obama's ass in the White House. After progressive Democrats were forced to vote for a health care bill that did not call for a public option. Conyers also said last month that Barack Obama was, quote, getting bad advice from clowns, end quote, on Afghanistan. You go, John. So apparently, Conyers got the call from Mr. Thin skin. Apparently, he's very thin skinned. Why doesn't Obama? Maybe he does. Hell, I don't know. But why doesn't he call John Boehner, you know, the Republican minority leader, and say, John, you've been demeaning me. You've been disrespecting me. Sit your ass down and shut up. You know, why doesn't he do that? Kathy says, I know why. Why? Huh? Kathy thinks it's a race thing that Obama can talk to Conyers like that because of they're both of the same race. If he said, she's probably right. If he said something like that to Boehner would probably freak out. Absolutely go nuts. But I still say, Brock is transcendent where it concerns race. It never came up. It came up one time during the campaign. It hasn't come up since. Barack Obama tries very hard not to be, other than in an historical sense, the first black president. You know, he's trying real hard. That was Bill Clinton anyway. So Barack Obama's only the second black president. He is the second. But I just find the whole thing kind of bizarre. Because John Conyers is a Democrat in a definitive sense. Whatever definition is left in this country of the Democratic Party and what it stood for over the past 60 years, John Conyers represents that part, that philosophy of the Democratic Party. There's no question about it. You know, I'm kind of sarcastically said a second, you know, a member of the left. I don't think so. No, he's a liberal. He's not a leftist. He's a liberal. And God bless him for it. You know, John Conyers is a liberal. Barack Obama is not, never was a liberal. He was what he is, what he is. I don't know what he is. He's another figurehead for corporate America. An erudite, well-spoken, spokesman for corporate America. And I think Obama tries, to a far greater degree than a Republican would, to drag along for some of the crumbs off the table, the American public, you know, as Obama does what corporate America demands that he does. Obama hasn't completely abandoned us. He makes sure that we get a crumb now and then. Now, does that piss me off? Of course, it makes me furious, doesn't it, you? Well, it does John Conyers. Only Conyers, he's a 26-term or 23-term representative from Michigan? What is that, 50 years? 46 years? Good Lord. So Conyers can say whatever the hell he wants to say. And should be saying it. He's a liberal. But for Obama to get all, all presidential on poor old John Conyers, who's just representative, to get all executive branch and call him up and say, you know, why are you demeaning me? Demeaning Obama? I didn't see anything in the quotes. Maybe I missed something, but I didn't see anything in the quotes that were reported where Conyers was demeaning the president. He's challenging him on his policies. Now, that wasn't allowed during the Bush years. And apparently, maybe, it's not going to be allowed now either. Spread the ear pollution, both far and wide. Keep your contributions.
made talk radio done right. From the left, it's Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. What is this? Got, oh, damn, it won't open. Oh, there it is. Oh, yeah, well, this is from Al Babe, who just sent me Chris Hedges' essay, Liberals Are Useless, but we did that, I think, Monday. But thanks, Al. The U.S. government said today, and I got this from Raw Story, the U.S. government said today, I guess that means the U.S. government, that would be the executive branch, that would be Barack Obama. The U.S. government said today, the United States said today that it remained opposed to international inspections of biological weapons sites in the U.S., even though it stressed its commitment to a U.N. treaty covering such arms. And remember, we invaded Iraq in part over its alleged stalling of U.N. weapons inspectors. But when the shoe's on the other foot, corporate America says, oh, no, 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 no. And then instructs the United States. I love the way they put that. Why don't they say a spokesman? Why isn't this story? It was covered at Raw Story. I don't know where it came from. But why doesn't whoever wrote this story say President Barack Obama or the Justice Department of President Barack Obama or something? You know, link it. Don't say the United States said Wednesday. What the hell does that mean? I get very pissed off at that. I don't know what the style book of the AP or Reuters or NBC, you know, what the style book where they tell you, they give a book. We had one at CNN. It tells you how to address everything, how to address people, how to refer to people, how to refer to this, that, how to call this, that in the first instance, the second instance, so on. And so it's just, you know, it's when you go to work for a media company, a big conglomerate like that, you have to take the damn book home and learn how to do it. If you're going to be a writer or if you're going to be an editor, that's exactly what you have to do. But I hate this. The United States said Wednesday, no, the Obama administration. And even that's too general. You know, things don't talk. People talk. Uniquely, people talk. I know, whales. Okay. But even though we will invade another country because that country will not allow us to take a look, or that's the charge, that was a lie, would not allow us to take a look at their chemical weapons installations that we provided to them. Just madness, isn't it? But when it comes to us, oh, no, 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 no. Ellen Toscher, U.S. Undersecretary of State on Arms Control and International Security, said, quote, when it comes to the proliferation of bioweapons and the risk of an attack, the world community faces a greater threat, end quote. Okay. And then she goes on to say, while the United States, quote, while the United States remains concerned about state-sponsored biological warfare and proliferation, we are equally, if not more concerned, about an act of bioterrorism due to the increased access to advances in the life sciences, end quote. What does that mean? She went on to say, quote, the Obama administration will not seek to revive negotiations on a verification protocol to the convention, end quote, which means we're not going to tell you squat. Of course we have weapons, biological weapons. Of course we do. Fort Detrick? Heck, please. Of course we do. Who was it, Nixon? Who signed the original treaty on biological weapons? The Biological Weapons Convention. I don't know who signed it. It doesn't matter. You don't have to email it to me. It really doesn't matter. But the position taken, this is just one issue. The rest of the world looks at this and says, what? Under threat of a shock and awe massive attack on a sovereign country because they won't let weapons inspectors check out their biological weapons, which the U.S. Secretary of State insisted was behind that palm tree right over there. But because the propagandists in the Bush crime family said, well, they won't let us in, so we're going to go kill several hundred thousand of them. That's how we're just going to go kill them. Okay, so here we are. We will not allow these weapons inspectors, UN weapons inspectors, to take a look at our biological weapons labs, most of which we deny even exist. As a matter of fact, I think we deny they all exist. They are research facilities, not weapons facilities. So since the position of the Obama administration is the same as the Bush administration, which was the same as the Clinton and Bush Sr. and Reagan and Carter, and, you know, you get the drift. Since it's all the same, then I think it's time, isn't it? I would imagine that people around the globe are thinking, well, maybe it's time for us to invade the United States. Oops, wait a minute. They have nukes, too. Not only do they have biological, but they have nukes. If we invaded the United States and said, look, you're violating the treaty. We don't know what you're going to do. You might ship anthrax through the mail. You might, I don't know, you might have a weaponized AIDS virus. You might weaponize, I don't know, anything. Pick one, H1N1, something. So we want to come in and take a look. We want to see what you're doing. You ever notice that we are exempt from all these treaties? We expect everyone else to be signatories and to throw open, like Iran, throw everything open. When's the last time we had weapons inspectors come to the United States where it concerned nuclear? Oh, well, that's true. We don't do that. When's the last time nuclear weapons inspectors went to never mind. So you get the drift. I would imagine that kind of pisses off to a very, very deep degree, on a visceral level, the rest of the world. Who do these arrogant bastards think they are? Well, up until, you know, the past 10 years, we were the big dogs on the street. And we're not anymore. The big dogs on the street coming are mostly going to be speaking Chinese. And all these people would just go away, don't you? I mean, don't you go away? Or wish they would go away. The insurance industry, of course, is declaring victory with this mess that we are supposed to believe is health insurance reform that is now in the Senate, I believe. They're still working on it, still emasculating it, tearing into pieces, chopping it up, slicing and dicing. The insurance company industry is standing back on the sidelines, just cheering it on. Yes! You know, when you stop and think about it, all right, let's stop and think about it. This buy-in for 55 up into Medicare, well, that immediately removes a 10-year block of people. I'm not saying I'm against it, because I just said, you know, Prairie 2 wrote in and said, hey, this could be a good thing. It could free up money for entrepreneurial activity and innovation and yada yada. But from the insurance company standpoint, this removes a group, 55 to 65-year-olds, that are very expensive to insurance companies. I mean, come on. Not that we wish anybody any bad luck when they hit their 50s, but that is, isn't that the age group where all of a sudden you say, what's this lump? And, you know, it's not a mosquito bite. Or I seem to be coughing a lot lately, and it's not bronchitis or whatever. You know what I'm saying? So all of a sudden, all those people are going to have an option to get away from the health insurance policy that they've had. And how long do you think it'll take the health insurance industry to suggest that they get out of town? Health insurance, we know this. I mean, come on, I'm not telling you something you don't know. The health insurance industry is not about your health. In fact, it has nothing to do with your health. It's about making money with an instrument called an insurance policy that is supposedly yada, yada, yada. Well, that's just simply garbage. So the deal here is that all of a sudden this 10-year age group, 55 to 65, will be taken off the insurance company's rolls. Ooh, they're just going, oh, hot damn. They're loving this. They're loving this. Now, in addition to that, they're also going to have a mandate that will force people who are otherwise uninsured for whatever reason, force people to buy their product. So the health insurance industry, that I'm sure they're trying to, you know, they're still feeding money to the Republicans to harass and force the Democrat, and feeding money to the so-called conservative or moderate Democrats to harass this bill, to continue to chip away at it, take this out, take that out, get rid of that. But they could declare victory now and go home. They don't need anything else. They've got it all. The insurance industry, they've got it all. Well, not quite all, but this is what capitalism is about. They don't want part of all. They want all of all. The whole thing, everything, gimme. So if they can get rid of people 55 to 65, not have to insure them anymore, oh, great, getting up in the morning, hallelujah, damn ya, are you kidding? Woohoo! Well, the joke's on us. It really is. Are you ready to just say, ah, to hell with it, you know? We had a thought, we had an idea, didn't we? That, oh my God, they're going to fix health insurance. It's going to become affordable and universal. And all of a sudden this huge burden will be taken. Oh my God! Just one more scam. It actually, you know, I snigger and make nasty sounds on the radio about it, but it actually just really pisses me off. I mean, it does. There's nothing worse, I don't think, than providing people with false hope. You know, whether it's your kid, that's why you should never lie to your kid or your niece, your nephew, your grandkids. You know, you shouldn't lie to them. You really shouldn't, you know. Okay. Daddy will play with you later. Grandpa will take you for a walk. Grandma, yeah, you know, and then you don't do it. You know, because the kid has that a bit of hope. Oh, hey, yeah, I get to go to the playground. Now something's come up. What? So, not that we're all a bunch of children, but you know, you just don't do that. You don't deny people hope. That was isn't that what the Obama campaign was all about? See, brilliant marketing, brilliant, absolutely stunning marketing. Because the people who put that campaign together understood that for the past 8 years and probably the past 16, hope, well, not the Clinton years. The Clinton had the tech bubble, and that made everything look really good under Clinton. Of course, Clinton destroyed, planted the seeds to utterly and absolutely destroy the U.S. economy, and we're seeing it now. We can blame, I can blame, you can blame Bush and Cheney as much as we want, but the seeds were, and rightly so, but the seeds were planted when Clinton signed the bill that ended Glass-Steagall, which allowed these financial institutions to start raping and pillaging and destroying and just doing what, well, take a look around. Look at the rubble. So, I don't know. Hope. Hope we can believe in. Change we can believe in. Hope, change. Where? Where? Where's the hope? Just don't, try not to get fooled again. That's going to be the prime directive that is being fed into the computer inside the deepest recesses of my brain. The prime directive will be, don't get fooled again. You know, don't get fooled again. Just don't. A friend of mine who's now dead told me a long time ago, why do you persist in voting Democratic? And, you know, he's been telling me this for years until he died. And I kept saying, because he said, look, the Democratic Party that you claim to have been brought up to be part of doesn't exist anymore. It really doesn't. Why don't you go Democratic Socialist like Bernie Sanders, or go Green like Ralph Nader, and try to make an effort? You know, just one vote. Sometimes one vote. Come on, below, you've heard that, one vote. Yeah. But when 100 million votes are cast, my little vote doesn't mean anything. Yes, it does. So it's just hard to give it up. But I've given up. So the prime directive, and I've been trying to do this. Maybe you have too. You know, just keep feeding it. Get that little loop going inside your head. I will not be fooled again. I will not be fooled again. I will not be fooled again. I will not fool myself again. See, then you can change it. I will not fool myself again. I will not fool myself again. I'm tired of being a naif where it concerns what the Democrats or the Republicans are going to do. They are both corrupt. So do something different. Yeah. Number here is 877-996-2556 if you want to chat. Two new studies provide evidence that post-traumatic stress disorder is a chemical change in the brain caused by trauma, and it might be possible to diagnose, treat, and predict susceptibility to PTSD based on brain scans or blood tests, so saith the a writer for the Army Times. A couple of researchers, the Duke University Medical Center and the Durham, North Carolina Veterans Affairs Medical Center, wondered why, with PTSD, depression and pain often occur together. Researchers already knew that people with PTSD show changes in their neurosteroids, which are the brain chemicals that they believe play a role in how the body responds to stress. But now they've come up with interesting findings that there are actual changes inside the brain. I guess I'm behind the curve somewhere. I thought that was kind of a given. You know, when you wash your brain with neurotransmitters that are all negative and bad and scary and death and blood and chaos, yeah, you're going to, I would assume it would have an effect on changing how your brain works, right? We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. You just want to sit and listen.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
All right, 21 past the hour. Coming up after this break, we have a missive from Bob Alexander. He doesn't write moments anymore. Remember, we used to have a moment with Bob. Well, he wrote the last one, and this one he calls a call to action. I don't know what the difference is, but we're going to share it with you because it's pretty good. It's about food. That's right. So stick around. That comes up after the next break. All right. Where are we? We're right here. Chris is in Nanaimo, British Columbia. Nanaimo, is that how you say it?
Nanaimo, actually.
Nanaimo, hi.
Hi there. Just wanted to comment on the Medicare being dropped instead of the Medicaid being risen. If you drop Medicare, it means all the people who voted Republicans, the the Reagan Democrats and all that, all of them get free health care, and I can't see that as being just. But if you raise the Medicaid rate to, say, $90,000, you can let the rich snobs who put us in this position to begin with pay the rates, the profits of the insurance industry. You know, just as a way of getting back at people who deserve it.
Well, you're probably right. But making Medicare available to people at age 55 is not free. As a matter of fact, it's going to cost them about $7,000 a year.
Well, Medicaid, I'm not too sure how that system works.
No, I'm talking about Medicare. Medicaid is essentially free. That's the bottom of the safety net in this country where it concerns health care or paying for health care. I had a brother who died with metastasized colon cancer, and he had Medicaid. That's all he had. And I can tell you that the treatment he got was pretty crappy. Because Medicaid, if I understand it right, it pays very little for things like the chemotherapy infusions, and you're kind of at the mercy of these labs that are not labs, but treatment centers that are set up where, you know, there'll be 12 people sitting there getting poison dripped into their veins. So I've got some strong feelings about that, but I think Medicaid, I guess for some people, it is a safety net. It is the bottom net in this safety net. It stops people from being just completely on their own where it concerns health care. But there are qualifications that you have to go through and hoops you have to jump to even get included in that. It ought to be, in this country, it ought to be single-payer health care with provisions for people who are unemployed or can't work or what have you, where they get the same kind of, everybody gets the same treatment. And if it takes government subsidies, so be it. You know, take a couple of billion or trillion away from making war on people in Afghanistan and Iraq and use that to pay for it. But we'll never do that because we are a hate-consumed nation. We want to get out there and steal from everybody and beat them up. Hello?
Well, I was just thinking in terms of a single-payer system, doing a single-payer system like Medicare that you have to pay into in order to get something out of versus Medicaid that you don't, that's just paid through taxes. If you're really going for not socialized medicine, but an actual single-payer system, you do it through the Medicaid. Now, yes, you're talking about a lack of care through Medicaid because of the differences of pay scales, but those could be reformed by just simply saying, set at the same rate as Medicare. I mean, that's a later reform, but if you want... Put in the door, single payer, Medicaid would be a lot faster way of doing it than Medicare. Medicare also has that obligation that, you know, if you're and have no money, you still have to pay.
Yeah, well, you may be right, Chris. It gets very confusing for me. But what difference, if you call it Medicare or Medicaid or a can of tuna, I mean, what difference does it make? I guess in being able to sell it to the Congress or to I don't know anymore. It's hard for me to get involved in that discussion, even think about that discussion that I hear on the news, or I see these politicians, these Democrats come out and talk about this nonsense. I hear Obama talk about it, and it's driving me crazy because there was a very simple solution. That's single payer. It's not government health care. It's not government-run health care. It's government-financed health care, and there's a big difference. But we're not going to do that in this country because there's too much money to be made off of sickness and deep, deep, deep fear and illness and so on and so forth. So as long as that's a profit center, it's going to remain a profit center.
Well, the only other option you have available is to literally conscript everyone, give them all VA benefits, and then discharge everybody from the Army.
Well, that is a little tricky. Thanks, Chris. I appreciate it. That's a good idea. Just put everybody in the military, and then they have veterans benefits. Oh, I think that would get some resistance. I don't know why this has to be so complicated. I do. It is so complicated because the two-thirds of the U.S. government are on the payroll of several industries, one of which is the health insurance industry. We know that. You know, we all know that. Even the dumbasses that watch Fox, I guess they know. Well, they probably don't know anything. But since most rational people or people with at least an IQ of 101, they know that. They know that the healthcare industry, among others, controls every single elected official. Because it's their money that put these members of the House and Senate and the executive branch into business. It's their money. And since it's their money, they get to call what the plays are. You know, it's sending in plays from the sidelines, and God help the quarterback that says, oh, wait a minute, I think I want to do something different. Oh, no, you don't. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Malloy.
25 before the hour. All right, we don't have any music for a call to action. I guess we could have blaring trumpets. We could have a fanfare, but we didn't prepare for it. So a call to action from Bob Alexander, who writes, Ronald Reagan was right. Uh-oh. Anytime you see something that starts out that way, well, Ronald Reagan was right. Or to be more precise, his corporate speechwriters were absolutely correct when they wrote this line for him to recite. Government is not the solution to our problems, Mommy. Government is the problem. Of course, that statement wasn't true when he read it from his script, but it is today. In the 28 years since Ronald Reagan became the top spokesman for corporate America, the government of the United States has become a wholly owned subsidiary of the corporatocracy. Our government does the bidding of the highest bidder. We, the people, just don't have enough cash to make our elected representatives represent us. Our decline into corporatism accelerated when we realized how powerless we were to affect change. The more we understood we couldn't stop the corporate wars, we couldn't demand decent, affordable health care, we couldn't even insist that our elected leaders be held accountable for crimes they committed against humanity, the more we stopped participating in the process of government, which is one of the goals of the corporatocracy. They achieve their aims faster if we are demoralized, disenfranchised, and disinterested. If voter turnout is an accurate measure of determining the sentiment of the people, over one-third of us didn't bother to vote in the 2008 election. Worldwide, we rank third from the bottom in voter turnout. And why should we vote anyway? The difference between the two corporate candidates is largely cosmetic. Both political parties represent corporate interests, not ours. We have yet to see the change we can believe in. Studies using game theory, which takes into account the ability of voters to interact, have found that the expected turnout for any large election should be zero. So in this arena, the corporatocracy has won. And we know the conditions will not stay the same. They don't get better by themselves. It will only get worse. It doesn't help that we're Americans. The French brought their country to a standstill with a national strike over the way their government attempted to reform the pension system. We're not capable of doing that. I don't know why. It's not that we need instant gratification. It's just very difficult for most of us to do anything if we can't see any discernible change within a short period of time. We've been at war for over 8 years in Afghanistan. Regardless of the protests, the marches, the letters, we will be at war for years into the future. It's impossible to measure if we're making any difference at all. But there is still a reason why we shouldn't all stand in line for a cup of Jim Jones Flavor Aid. There is a reason to still have hope. We don't need a national strike. We don't have to bus in by the thousands and march on Washington. We don't have to make one sign or banner. And we can still prevail. All we have to do is stop eating poison. And we will literally transform the world within 10 years, tops. I realize that right about now you might think it's time for the men in white coats to come scoop me up in one of their industrial-sized butterfly nets. But give me a couple minutes more here. First, go rent, beg, borrow, or steal a copy of the documentary, Food Incorporated. In the 93 minutes that it runs, you'll find out that our food industrial complex is out to kill us. You'll see how a handful of corporations control our nation's food supply. Though the companies try to maintain the myth that our food still comes from farms with red barns and white picket fences, our food is actually raised on massive factory farms and processed in mega industrial plants. The current method of raw food production is largely a response to the growth of the fast food industry since the 1950s. The way we eat has changed more in the last 50 years than in the previous 10,000. And these changes are making us sick. Because of the high proliferation of processed foods derived from corn, Americans are facing alarming increases in obesity, especially among children. One in three Americans born after 2000 will contract early onset diabetes. Among minorities, the rate will be one in two. 70% of processed foods today have genetically modified ingredients. Cattle given feed that their bodies are not biologically designed to digest result in new strains of E. coli bacteria, which sickens roughly 73,000 Americans annually. In 1998, the USDA implemented microbial testing for Salmonella and E. coli so that if a plant repeatedly failed these tests, a factory, the USDA could shut down that factory. After being taken to court by the Meat and Poultry Associations, the USDA no longer has that power. According to Eric Schlosser, author of Fast Food Nation, quote, there is this deliberate veil, this curtain that's drawn between us and where our food is coming from. The industry doesn't want you to know the truth about what you're eating because if you knew, you might not want to eat it, end quote. Food Inc. shows us how the food industrial complex came into being and how it uses political power to stay in power. And after watching the film, you'll understand that this is one war we can win. Go to foodincmovie.com. That's food, I-N-C, movie. Foodincmovie.com. And learn 10 simple things that we can do to change the food system. Did you get that? Food, Inc., movie. Foodincmovie.com. It's all about the money, Bob writes, and the ability to measure progress. Assume a family of three spends about $600 a month on food. By not giving the money to the food industrial complex, that $7,200 a year that isn't going to Monsanto or Tyson Chicken or any other company that peddles poison, that loss of market share makes corporations pay attention. Organic foods start showing up in Walmart. It's happening now. And because of that, tons of pesticides, herbicides, and chemical fertilizers aren't going into the system. For every fast food burger we don't buy, or any organic food we do buy, makes a real difference. According to Gary Hirschberg, the founder of Stonyfield Farm, quote, the irony is that the average consumer does not feel very powerful. He or she thinks that he or she is the recipient of whatever industry has put there for them to consume. Trust me, it's the exact opposite. Those businesses spend billions of dollars to tally our votes. When we run an item past the supermarket scanner, we're voting. In this one arena, we have the power to finally make the corporatocracy adapt to our demands. So often we've had to adapt to what they force upon us. Please watch Food Inc. Go to foodincmovie.com and see how we literally can change the world. One bite at a time. And unless the President and Congress attempt a Food Reformation Act, where we're all mandated to buy crappy food, I think we have a shot at it. Joe Salatin, owner and farmer of Polyface Farms, said, quote, imagine what it would be if, as a national policy, we said we would be only successful if we had fewer people going to the hospital next year than last year. The idea then would be to have such nutritionally dense, unadulterated food that people who ate it actually felt better, had more energy, and weren't sick as much. Now see, that's a noble goal. End quote. Call to action there from Bob. Yeah, Walmart has begun selling organic food. I think following in the steps of that behemoth, I believe Target is too. Now, definitions come into play here. I don't know if the USDA or the Food and Drug Administration, whoever is supposed to determine the definition of organic or natural or whatever, I don't know how they define the word. It's easy enough to find out. Never mind. It would not be easy at all. It'd be very difficult. But we try here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains to get as much organic food as possible when it's available. And obviously right now it's not locally grown and organic. You know, where you actually go out someplace and you see the chickens out there eating bugs off the ground and scratch around in the dirt for whatever the hell it is they eat. But they look like happy chickens. You know, then when you wring their necks and defeather them and put them in a bag and sell them, at least you know you're getting, if that's your thing, you know you're getting a natural chicken. Have you seen those videos of chickens? And we have them here in Georgia. Oh, my God, in North Georgia? I think Georgia is the number one chicken-producing state in America. These long chicken houses? Every time I go by, well, I'm not trying to demean anybody here, but it reminds me of a death camp. There they are. And you cannot travel the interstates of around Metro Atlanta without seeing those great big, outside of Metro Atlanta, without seeing those great big trucks with, a thousand cages on it with about 20 chickens jammed into each cage. And they're on their way to, I'm laughing, and they're on their way to a Tyson slaughterhouse where, undocumented workers work. And I'm waiting for the time that somebody shows up on the local news here and says, well, you know, I bought these chicken wings and I found a thumb in there. And the skin on the thumb is kind of brown, so I guess it's Mexican. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
For a liberal helping of truth, it's More Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. Back to your phone calls. Doug is in Orlando, listening on XM. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Mike. We live up in Atlanta. As far as this whole healthcare reform thing goes, I don't think that you can mandate someone to buy a product that they're not buying as part of the Congress's power to regulate commerce. There's no commerce if I'm not buying something, so I don't see how the government can force me to buy a product that I'm not buying now. I mean, if they could do this, then they can force people to take vacations at Disneyland.
but on a state level, you're already forced to buy car insurance if you want to.
That's a different constitution. That's a state constitution. I'm talking about the powers of the Congress are defined in Article 1.
But, I understand, and I'm not trying to be argumentative here, but if the states were doing something in violation of the U.S. Constitution, the Supreme Court would have said something a long time ago. I don't get it either. I mean, I really don't, but apparently there is a legal, what am I trying to say? There's a legal avenue down which the government can order, any government, the state, the federal, can order people to buy insurance if they want to drive. That's the trade-off.
But you have an option. You can choose not to drive. And I think the difference there is that the state has the power to regulate activities to its own constitution because ours is a federal system. There are powers that the state has that are reserved to it under the famous constitution that are not reserved to the federal.
Congress. Let me ask you this: Do you think? And I'm not trying to challenge you here. This is just a question. Do you think that nobody in the Obama administration, but nobody in the leadership of the Democratic Party has said, "Wait a second, we can't do this because it's unconstitutional." You know, the whole.
Stop them from doing the Patriot Act or anything else that we know is unconstitutional. It's just that nobody ever challenges these things, and I think
that
is a big lawsuit to challenge that whether they have the right to mandate you to buy a product. Why not have to mandate people to buy vacations in Las Vegas? You know.
I understand what you're saying, and I agree. I mean, I don't disagree with this at all, what you're saying at all, and I hope somebody does challenge it. And you know what, Doug? I'll bet somebody will. I bet there will be a case filed as soon as this becomes law to to declare it unconstitutional. Doug, thanks, man. Appreciate you checking in. Take care. Take care. Mike is in San Francisco listening on Green 960. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Michael. I just turned my radio down.
Good.
Glad to get a hold of you. I am calling about your comment about John Conyers.
Uh-huh.
I think the quote was, he said Obama was getting bad advice from clowns on Afghanistan.
Uh-huh.
This is from the Common Dreams article. You know who the clowns are, don't you?
Well, Rahm Emanuel is...
It's FBI.
Who?
FBI. Crystal and Kagan. Remember, they after they folded the folded the website. Everybody went wondered, oh, that's it. You know, the neocons are dead. No, they're not dead.
Oh, that group, yeah.
Under a different thing. They call it the Foreign Policy Initiative. You missed this. This was came out over the weekend on Saturday, 12-5. It was on also on Common Dreams.
Mm-hmm.
The headline is Neocons Get Warm and Fuzzy Over War President.
Yeah, I did miss that.
Yeah. This is, let's see, they're christening Obama the new war president.
Yeah?
Yeah, okay, the core leadership of FBI has waged their campaign in countless editorials and columns published in the Washington Post, the Wall Street Journal, and the Weekly Standard. Oh, Project for a New American Century, that's what I was trying to say before.
Right, PNAC.
So it's the same PNACers, and now they call themselves the Foreign Policy Initiative.
Yeah. All right, now that you're being very slow and speaking in short sentences, I understand, I'm familiar with what you're talking about. Yes, absolutely. I did not read what you're referring to over this past weekend, but I damn sure will track it down now. Does it piss you off?
Well, yeah, you know, kind of. But, I mean, I never really believed, you know, that, you know, well, the neocons are gone. This is the end of the neocons. You
right.
You gotta be kidding me, man.
Right, right.
You know. Yeah, I don't need any swampland. Thanks a lot.
I got you loud and clear. Thanks, Mike. I appreciate your comments. Yeah, and I got an email from somebody who said, "Look, there's some things about John Conyers that he was involved in Democratic Socialism and this conference and that conference back in the '90s. So I may have John Conyers pegged completely wrong in my interpretation of who he is politically." He may definitely be a democratic socialist who still operates within the Democratic Party. So if I need to do further research before I shoot off my mouth where it concerns Conyers, I think I probably should. I'm so down on the Democratic Party right now that I don't, other than Kucinich and a couple other people, I just don't see anybody in that party who amounts to, a good nose blow. If my interpretation of Conyers is wrong, then I, accept that and we'll find, I will tell my research department to get off its ass and start providing me with good information. Wait a second. I am the research department. Oh, well, it just goes like that, doesn't it? All right. We have a break here. When we come back, more of your phone calls tonight. All right. Isn't this fun? Talk radio like normal people do it. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour here on the Malloy program. Back to your phone calls in just a second. Email here from Warren in Virginia, who says there's another, or asks a question, is there another housing bubble coming? He writes, Mike, here's a subject I just heard about on NPR radio that might make a good discussion item. Well, I'm afraid to discuss it, Warren. Anyway, he writes, because of inaction on the part of Congress and the fact that we were fooled into voting a liberal Republican in as president, we are about to have a second great crisis, the foreclosure time bomb. We have not even reached the midpoint of the projected total number of foreclosures. The subprime loan ripoff problem has not been fixed by the government, nor have the millions of Americans who have or will be foreclosed on been given any time or a break on their underwater house loans. This is because the banking industry has not been forced by Obama or the Congress to really address the problem and take action. Hence, housing prices have not even come close to bottoming out. This will lead to further bank failures, which will result in another credit crunch, another market crash, and even more unemployment. How long will it take and what will it take to get these fascists who run our government to realize people are about ready to take to the streets? Sincerely, Warren, I know that there are more foreclosures coming. There were a lot of you know, five-year loans that were written in, you know, 76 and 77 and 78. Well, 70, 76 and 77 anyway, with these huge balloon notes, the interest-only notes, this and that. And, yeah, I don't know where it's going to end. All I know is the people responsible for doing this are just are continuing to churn the stock market and the bond market and this market and that market, and they're screwing around with the dollar, and the madness goes on. The ultra wealthy in this country who understand how to do this stuff with the derivatives and the this and the and I don't even know what the terms are. They're making billions once again. They're just stealing. I don't know. In most countries, when you finally have a revolution where the disparity of income between the top and the bottom gets so huge, and you finally have that kind of revolution, usually heads roll, literally. You know, people get shot, people get put up against the wall, people get decapitated, people face the guillotine, people this, people that. So I don't know how much longer this is going to go on. Oh my God, I really don't. I've got something here, if I can find it in this damn stack of items that I want to get to. Here it is. When I saw it, this comes from Bloomberg.com. I don't know what to make of this. Goldman Sachs, the writer of this, Alice Schroeder, she writes, I just wrote my first reference for a gun permit, said a friend who told me of swearing to the good character of a Goldman Sachs Group Incorporated banker who applied to the local police for a permit to buy a pistol. The banker had told this friend of mine that senior Goldman Sachs people have loaded up on firearms and are now equipped to defend themselves if there is a populist uprising against the bank. This is a Bloomberg. So the writer says, I called Goldman Sachs spokesman Lucas Van Praag to ask whether it's true that Goldman partners feel they need handguns to protect themselves from the angry proletariat. He didn't call me back. The New York Police Department has told me that, quote, as a preliminary matter, end quote, I believe some of the bankers I inquired about do have permits. The NYPD also said it would be a while before it can name names. I don't know what to make of this story. But according to the writer, and she's getting it secondhand, you know, who knows? The executives at Goldman, if we want to play this out, you know, I'll take it third hand, fourth hand, fifth hand. I'll make stuff up. Here we go. You ready to make stuff up? Goldman Sachs management has told its people, you better arm yourself because we are stealing so much And we are ripping off so many people, and we are causing such monumental grief. This makes the SNL scandal, where the thieves, including one of the Bush brothers, just made billions, and the American public, we're still paying for it. We're still paying for the SNL crisis of the 80s. We're still paying for it, and we'll continue to pay. Well, forget that. But this thing that Goldman Sachs and the rest of these predatory bastards have done, it makes the SNL scandal of the 80s look like, I don't know, the preliminary bout, you know, the three-rounder, you know, the one before the headliners come on. Here we are, Goldman Sachs. What did I read the other day? They have allocated, was it $12.5 billion for bonuses? They have over 1,000 employees who are going to get at least $1 million bonus for doing what? Somebody tell me what Goldman Sachs does to better this economy. What do they make? Are they making sure that small businesses get money? No. Are they making sure that retirees' stock portfolios are in good shape? No. What do they do? Are they assisting home building associations? No. What are they doing? What does a company like Goldman Sachs do? You know, except just jiggle things around and move stuff. And I realize I'm talking here on the kindergarten level, but that's the level on which I understand the stuff. They're doing nothing. They're stealing. They're just stealing. And you can make the argument, okay, but calm down, Malloy. The stuff they're stealing is just paper. It's not real money anyway. Okay, that may be true, but as long as 99% of this society agrees that it is real money, you know, when they get on a jet or buy a jet and take off for Cannes or wherever they go to spend the winter, that's real. Goldman Sachs executives being told to arm themselves. I'm going to have to get one of those bigger clips. I think the one I have only holds like 16 rounds. I'm going to have to get one of those banana handle things. Oh, God. All right. Back to the real world here. Tim is in Little Rock, Arkansas, listening on XM. Hey, Tim.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
Moving right along, sort of.
Hey, man, I'm just so tired of hearing the politician, like, Obama, we voted for him, but the next thing you hear is all this talk about protecting people that make up to $250,000 a year and stuff, or $200,000 per person in a married couple. That's, you know, I just don't think that's right.
What do you think it should be?
Well, I mean, we've got people out here that need stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, what on earth do you need with more than $36,000 a year?
Mm-hmm.
That's $3,000 a month.
Right.
I work hard. I don't make that.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think these people, I mean, I don't understand why they're allowed to make it, but why is Obama talking about protecting people that make up to $200,000? That's just too much for anybody.
Are you sure he's saying that? You're talking about increases in taxes to pay for health care and stuff like that, right? Is that what you're referring to?
Right.
Yeah.
So we're all talking about this. You know, we got people that people that can't have a good place to live. We got, and all this stuff. And you got someone that makes $120,000 a year, that's $10,000 a month. You don't need that.
Hey, hold on a second. I got to do a break here, Tim. Remember where we are in this conversation. Hold on, and we'll pick it up when we come back. Quick break. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
If I got me a wealthy man, I wouldn't have to work at all. I'd fool around and have a ball. Money, money, money. Must be funny in the rich man's world. Money, money, money. Always sunny in the rich man's world.
Hey, truth seekers, here's the truth speaker, Mike Malloy.
Past the hour, we're talking with Tim in Little Rock. All right, you're suggesting then that there should be an upward limit as to what people are paid in this country.
Well, right, Mike. I mean, I drive around out here, and it's just like you see, as long as there's anybody that doesn't have a living wage and have, you know, nice things for their family and stuff. Uh-huh. And then you think about someone making 10 or 12. I mean, the upper limits of what the politicians are talking about is $20,000 a month before they're even hit with taxes. And even after that, it just goes up from there. It's ridiculous.
Well, before they're asked to pay a tax surcharge for health care, of course, people who earn up to $250,000, up to any amount, are supposed to pay taxes. I realize a lot of wealthy people avoid it altogether and leave it to working people like me, like you, like whoever, to run the country with our money. And we don't have enough money. That's why we are 11, 12, 15, I don't know what the number is anymore, $1 trillion in debt. So it is, you know, it's a shell game. It's ridiculous. I get your point.
I just mean the whole thing all together, Mike. I mean, not just a little surcharge to pay so that, you know, for our doctors. I mean, what do people need all that money for? That's just way too much for any one person.
Well, I agree with that, but what do you do to stop it?
Well, it should just, over 36,000, over 50,000-60,000 a year, how much more do you need? Why not just tax it?
Well, I don't have any problem with that, Tim. Back during the Eisenhower years, I think when Kennedy lowered the upper tax limit, wasn't it in, I'm sure somebody will let me know here, wasn't it the upper tax limit for the ultra-wealthy 70, 80, 85%? It was almost confiscatory where everything was taken. You know, I don't know. But what I do know is we live in a society where, starting with our kids when they're still in the crib, excuse me, as a culture, we beat into their heads this so-called consumerism, which is not consumer. We don't consume things. We use them until we break them, and then we go buy new. if you want to change what you're talking about, then it seems to me that the entire society has to be changed, which I'm all in favor of. A more equitable distribution of resources, not just money, but, oh, hell, I don't know. Tim, you're making my head hurt. I understand what you're saying. I have no answers. Tim, I'm as lost as you are. All right, just wandering around bumping into stuff. That's all I'm doing. Tim, thanks, man. I appreciate you checking in. It'll never happen in this society, in this culture, because everybody in America, immigrant, native-born, legal, undocumented, it doesn't make any difference. We're all told the same lie, you know. Hey, psst, come here. You too can be a zillionaire. I can? Oh, yeah. You mean through the lottery? No. Just continue to vote in a way that allows those of us who are zillionaires to continue to be zillionaires, and maybe someday you can. You know, which is a lie. You know, it's an absolute lie. 99.9% of us, literally, 99.9% of us, we're not going to reach that point. Come on. Come on. And any fool who spends their whole life trying to get there is that, a fool. You know, it's crazy. Just absolutely crazy. You know, to think that we've come to a point, this sounds like more of a Tom Hartman topic, that we've come to a point in this culture slash society where, and we didn't get here last week or last month. We've been here for a long time. You know, what you got determines who you are. And if you want to be more, you got to get more. Right? And we're not talking about getting more decency or honesty or justice or clear thinking or read more books. You know, we're talking about getting more stuff. I don't know what to do, Tim. I really don't. I really don't. So, let's take a break. We'll come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
C-SPAN, so you don't have to. It's more Mike Molloy.
25 before the hour, I got a couple of emails here about the tax rate. Kathy in Green Bay writes, Kennedy proposed, but Johnson actually got it passed. Individual tax rates reduced the individual tax rate. The top rate dropped from 91% to 70%. P.S. When the tax rates were so high, Kathy writes, people would reinvest in their companies instead of taking more income. Well, those days are certainly gone, right? Mike is in Chicago. Hey, Mike.
Hey, Mike. How's everything going?
Pretty good. How about you? It's colder than hell up there tonight, isn't it?
Oh, it's dropping down to 10, 15 below wind chill, so everything's black ice right now.
Oh, you've been there, done that.
I hated it.
Got the T-shirt.
I just wanted to let you know, I just saw Bill Press and Stephanie over the weekend. They came out and did an appearance, and I was asking Bill Press this. What happens if no public option comes through? And to Bill Press, it didn't even enter the realm of feasibility because he said it would be political suicide between him sending 30,000 troops and then this. He said there's no way that they would be able to survive. So he said, so I don't even enter that into the equation. Hmm. And now look, 3 days later, 4 days later, what's happening?
Yeah, yeah.
It's just, it's such a shame to me how this party has just been bought and sold, and Obama has just been so spineless about everything. He's been as quiet as a church mouse.
Yeah, that's the part I can't get. You know, I entertain the idea, as a lot of people do, that he's afraid because he's the first black president, and there are millions of crazy people in this country who are inspired every day by Glenn Beck to commit presidenticide. On the other hand, Barack Obama understood full well when he ran for president, if he got it, he'd have to face this. So, I don't understand either his seeming fearfulness. I don't want to say cowardice. I reserve that for Republicans, but his seeming fearfulness to, if nothing else, drag in the leaders of his own party, whether they're blue dog or red dog or I don't care what they are, and just say, look, I'll do this. God damn it, do it. Or I will guarantee you that come re-election time, you will not get a dime. And we will quietly back your opponent in a primary. I don't know why they don't play hardball. I mentioned this.
You know what it is? It's the whole confrontation thing. And to me, it began with Sarah Palin saying that he's palling around with terrorists. He should have came out and said, look, my daughters hear this in the media, and their father is known as palling around terrorists because of these lies you're starting. And he should have came out and said something. And right there when he didn't, I knew, I said, oh, it's going to take him a long time to grow a spine.
Yeah,
it's a shame what it's turned into. And all this time, you know, we could have been overturning Don't Ask, Don't Tell. We could have been measuring window treatments for Bush, Cheney, and Rumsfeld in The Hague. And we've been doing none of this because for the last 4 months we're concentrating on this. And look where it got us.
Yeah, well, another dead end, I guess, another brick wall.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Back up a second. Stephanie and Bill were in Chicago. Where in the hell was I? My invitation didn't come?
You know what? As a matter of fact, I asked Stephanie where you were and where the MOOCs were. She didn't bring out the MOOCs, and she said they didn't travel well. And she said it was just scheduled, just them two. She didn't have anything to do with it. But I did bring up your name. I said, where's Mike? You guys should have made it the trifecta.
Well, I know what it is now. The station that carries them in Chicago will not carry my program.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is amazing to me. I don't know why we're not back on WLS. You know, I could help save WLS's ass. It's going right down the toilet, I understand.
Well, have you heard the program lineup on WLS?
It's
got Mark Levin, it's got Sean Hannity, it's got Rush Limbaugh. It's completely gone. I'm like, what happened to Stephen Gary? You know?
Yeah, yeah. Well,
it just shows you, you know, and supposedly the liberal media, that's a perfect example of it, right?
Well, that's very true. It's a shame what happened to WLS, but no, WCPT in Chicago just simply won't carry my program, and I don't get it. I don't understand why. Maybe it's because I have a potty mouth. I have no idea. Hey,
that's
Mike.
That's why I listen to you, though.
Thanks a lot, Mike.
All right, Mike, take care.
All right, you too. I got an email from somebody who said, where's Stephanie? Well, that's where Stephanie was. Wait till I see her in Minneapolis on, when is that? The 25th? 23rd of January? Am I supposed to say that yet? I don't know if the station's made an announcement yet or not, but the one in Minneapolis. What the hell is it? KTNF, yeah. Jason's driving in Jackson, Mississippi, listening on XM. Hi, Jason.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm all right.
I was calling basically, I'm born and raised in Texas. The only talk shows I've ever heard have all been conservative. You know, I've never heard, I just got XM because I just bought a new truck. You know, I like what I hear. You know, it's totally the opposite of what I'm used to hearing because I've always listened to Glenn Beck and Mark Levin and Rush and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, which I actually had a different idea. Whenever I was flipping through here and it said America Left, I was like, oh, I've got to hear this. You know, they're going to, you know, think everything Obama does is great. And I've actually heard in the past 2 days different than what I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of a breath of fresh air, you know, so I've probably been misinformed about a lot of stuff.
Well, that's very true. I've worked at radio stations where, you know, not like you're listening on XM. We get carried on radio stations, too. But I've worked at radio stations. I was just talking to that guy from Chicago. I used to work at WLS in Chicago that had Rush in the morning, had Hannity at some point in the afternoon. I was on in the evening. And we used to have just an enormous audience. I mean, in Chicago, for God's sake. I don't know why they program just one kind of talk radio in so many of these markets. But one thing that the so-called conservatives, and I don't call them conservatives, hell, I got conservatives in my family, and they think people like Beck and Levin and the rest of these people are just droolingly insane.
Yeah.
They're not really conservatives at all. They're fascists. But you know, so many people that listen only to right-wing talk get a complete misunderstanding of what liberals, the few of us that are left, or in media, or progressives, what we're about.
I've been getting the past couple of days actually listening. I mean, there's substance to what is in the radio shows, which I can't tell you a whole lot of the shows I've been listening to because I don't know everybody's names. I mean,
Right.
I can't even tell you what most of the people's names are because I've heard it before, you know, but I do want to say that, you know, it's nice to hear it, you know, but I wouldn't say that I'm a conservative, you know, I'm not a race hater or whatever liberals think conservative.
Well, I don't think that,
you know, that's not me. You know, I'm not against gay marriage. I think everybody should be able to be miserable in their life. You know, that's great. But there's one thing listening to that guy a while ago saying nobody should make over $36,000 a year.
Well, I think what he was doing was questioning at a time when the country is so deeply in debt, when the only people making these millions and millions of dollars, they're not working people. I don't know what you do for a living, but I have a feeling that you probably are working class. You said you got a new truck. Okay. You're never going to make millions of dollars. I'm never going to make millions of dollars. And what that caller was talking about was so many people in this society who make those big amounts of money. What the hell are they contributing? What are they doing? And I'm not talking about the media people. I understand there's a lot of people in media, Limbaugh, Hannity, Beck, even when you go to people like Charles Gibson on ABC or Brian Williams on NBC, yeah, they're up in the multi-million dollar range, all of them. But what are they doing? What are they making? What are they producing? The ones I'm talking about, and I think my caller was talking about, are the people who work in this phony mortgage industry, the Wall Street bankers, who are not doing anything, not producing anything. They're just churning up the stock market. They steal their profits. They're stealing from people like you and me. They are literally, they might as well be holding a gun on you.
Oh, yeah. I understand that.
And that's what his point was. His point was simply, why, at a time when there is so much grief in this country, you know, real unemployment up around 17, 18, 19%, people really hurting, people losing their homes, people don't know what the hell they're going to do, just to make ends meet. Forget about having the kids in college. Forget about, having a nice Christmas for your children. What the hell are people going to do to make ends meet? In the meantime, you got this whole 1% of people who are just laughing their asses off at workers, just laughing at us. And just they continue to steal as much as they can. That's who he was talking about. Because you and I are never going to be up there. Never.
Well, I work for a family business. My grandfather started the company that I worked for in the early 60s. And it's a big money maker, which I'm not saying I'm big money. I work 60, 70, 80 hours a week. You
right.
know, I've been at work since 6:30 this morning, and I'm still going now.
Good Lord.
But, you know, I don't want people out there to think that people that do have money are all wrong. You know, we have apartment complexes where nobody that lives there is high income. You know, we have everything set up through HUD and stuff like that, you know, to make sure people have a place to live.
Well, Jason, listen, we just about here have to take a break. Listen, I really appreciate you calling. All I would ask is you just continue to listen. You're going to hear stuff from so-called liberal talk radio that you probably won't agree with. But I honestly believe this. I honestly believe this, that you will get more of a realistic set of information or things to think about in listening to so-called liberal talk than you will from so-called conservative talk. I really mean that. Now, I may be biased about that, obviously, but just keep going. I'm glad that you're doing what you're doing. I appreciate it. I'm glad you found this program. I'm on every night, Monday through Friday, so tune in once in a while, pal. Thanks, Jason. I got to leave it there, man. We'll be right back. It is 10 before the hour. I think I ought to mention our contributors tonight. I stop doing that every night. Sharon Gordy is our military affairs correspondent. Bruce Enberg, economic affairs. Kate Petrini, education. Bob Alexander, Bridget Wolf, ethics advisors of the program. And Kathy Bay, who is the executive producer and engineer. Ron is in Raleigh, North Carolina, listening online. Hey, Ron.
Hey, Brother Mike. Happy solstice to you.
Thank you. Back at you.
I've been listening, and people have been talking about this mandated health insurance and
right.
car insurance as being the same thing. It's a false construct. See, driving is a privilege, and you can't drive on the streets of any state without, you know, a driver's license, which the state grants to you. It's a privilege. Living, when last I heard, was a right, and that's the big difference. And the only way to opt out of living is to kill yourself or have somebody do it for you. And so those two are not the same thing, and I think somebody could challenge this mandated health insurance under the Commerce Clause. I'm not a constitutional scholar, but this is the only time that the federal government is going to be able to put the strong arm on people to buy private products.
Well, let me ask you the same thing I asked the last guy who brought this up. If that's true, and as you say, you're not a constitutional scholar, neither am I. If that's true, then why hasn't some genius who is advising members of Congress, Democratic members of Congress, how to write this law, why haven't they said, whoops, wait a second, no, sorry, we can't do it, because it's unconstitutional?
I'm getting the feeling they're going, ixnay on the problem, eh, you know? It's like, don't say anything, maybe nobody will notice. But I get the feeling that there are people that are looking to challenge this thing in the court. I'm just thinking that the people that want to do it right now aren't up for, you know, saying, well, it may be a constitutional problem, because you know how many constitutional problems there are right now.
Oh, yeah. We've got a whole list of them.
I mean, nobody's challenging those because nobody seems to have the wherewithal, the money, the time, or whatever. I've been trying to find out how many lawyers we have in our, you know, antitrust division and the Justice Department, and what are we paying them for?
You're right.
You know? I mean, no, we don't seem to say, you know, Comcast, NBC, that seems like a trust problem. They just think, well, let it go.
Well, it does, doesn't it?
Yeah,
but
it does.
I you know, the rules have all changed in the first place. And you know, if you listen to Tom Hartman, he gets all heady into this stuff. He can handle this a lot better than I can. But, you know, we don't live under the Constitution as originally written. And to a certain degree, that's a good thing.
Well, I'm a black guy, so, you know.
Well, there you go. I mean, you'll agree with that, as are most women.
Absolutely.
So there have been changes. But as far as the basic protections that the Constitution offered, those have been gutted.
Absolutely.
The 10 that make up the Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments to the Constitution and some subsequent to that, those have just been utterly and absolutely trampled on. And I don't want to, you know, piss off any conservative listeners who might be thinking about switching, but most of that stomping has been done by Republicans.
Absolutely.
By conservatives.
About the Second Amendment and not all of it.
Well, there you go. So I would imagine that somebody is already working to, file the first lawsuit in a federal court someplace to challenge the constitutionality, like you say.
Absolutely. The only other way that car insurance and health insurance would be the same thing is to say, look, you've got to buy car insurance even if you don't have a car.
Well, that's true.
And by the way, as far as Barack Obama is concerned,
yeah,
I would be wearing Kevlar underwear if I were him. So, you know, wow. I can understand why he's a little shaky on stuff.
Well, yeah, but
he
like,
wasn't my first choice anyway. I'm a black guy, but he wasn't my first
choice. Well, that's, you know, I realize why you felt you had to say that. But, you know, you don't have to, not on this program.
Oh, I know. But, you know, people think when I say that, they go, oh, that's weird. I said no, but.
Yeah,
you know,
I know. It's the old race issue. But here's what I was saying earlier on a different caller, or maybe not to a caller. Obama is not stupid. He knew what he was doing. He knew that he was challenging 232 years of racism by saying, I think I want to be the president of the United States. Ow!
So it's the perfect time for it, because I wasn't going to vote for the fool on the hill.
Right. But yeah. since he knew what he was doing, I don't see why now anybody can pin on him, like I'm inclined to do now. I don't see how anyone can pin on him the he's afraid label.
Yeah.
Because he knew what he was getting into. He knew what he was going to have to deal with.
Absolutely.
He knew that the big power brokers up there, when the Democrats are not in power, when the Republicans are in power, they are white Southern men. Who will not hesitate to make him look bad, to remove him from office, to find something on him. Now, the Republicans happen not to be in power now, and President Obama better hope that during the 8 years, last 8 years that he's president, he better hope that the Republicans never get control of the House and or the Senate. They will make his life more miserable than, and I'm being serious here, than any slave owner ever did back in Mississippi in 1845. You know what I'm saying there?
Let me ask you a question, Mike.
Yeah.
Do you think that, you know, sometimes I get these weird thoughts in my head. Maybe we should have let McCain have this.
Well, hell yeah. I said that back during when the campaign was just getting going with it, when there were still 8 Democrats and 8 Republicans. I said, wait a second. Let McCain have it. And oh man, did Democrats and progressives and liberals just bust me a new body orifice with emails and phone calls. You know, what are you talking about, Malloy? And I said, well, things are so screwed up. They can only get worse. Why have a Democrat, any Democrat, as president when this train wreck occurs?
Like Jimmy Carter, with 16 years of Republicans, Jimmy Carter comes in and it's all his fault.
Right. Well, and Obama is handling things that Carter couldn't even imagine.
Absolutely.
He couldn't even imagine. 2 wars, an economy that's tanking, a national debt that, you know, China owns our ass. They just haven't come to collect yet.
Oh, yeah.
Hey,
yeah,
listen,
yeah.
Ron, thanks, man. We're out of time. Appreciate it. Take care, okay?
I'm in North Carolina, Mike.
I lived there twice, pal. I lived in Raleigh 2 times, went to NC State. Been there, done that, got that t-shirt too.
Come on back, though.
All right, Ron.
All right,
take care. No, I didn't graduate. All right, that's it for tonight. Thanks for hanging out. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
Of all the things that